there are people who fought Title IX battles, and that was their purpose. And I'm very conscious of those people and very grateful to mm-hmm. them. That's not who I am. Mm-hmm. I am just a very plain-spoken, say it like it is, person. Sometimes it hurts people's feelings. Sometimes people are intimidated, but when they get to know me and they're around me, they're like, you're nothing like people think you are. Mm-hmm. I coach very bluntly. I get on referees very bluntly. It's not personal. It's fighting to be a winner.
The stretch by Mars in the pitch. One on the hit to right. Two on the back there. Lay back there. Hold on!
Tiger fans, please welcome home to the great state of Louisiana, Coach Kim Mulkey.
When I started this podcast, my goal was pretty simple. I wanted to sit down with all of the great minds here at LSU Athletics, whether it was coaches, players, administrators, creators, all the really smart people that walk around these buildings in this campus every day, and try to steal some of the ideas that make them great. I did not anticipate that 7 episodes in, I'd be sitting down with a Naismith Hall of Famer about to be inducted to the Naismith Hall of Fame by Michael Jordan. But that's exactly who I have on today's episode in Kim Mulkey. To borrow a Will Wade phrase, unless you've spent the last few weeks living under a rock, you're well aware now that LSU has hired Kim Mulkey to be its new women's basketball head coach. And if you know that news, then you probably know her resume. 3 national championships as a head coach at Baylor, 2 national championships as a player at Louisiana Tech, another national championship as an assistant coach at Louisiana Tech, a gold medal in 1984, the fastest coach in Division I history, men's or women's, to 600 wins, the only human being ever with a national championship as a head coach, a player, and an assistant coach in college basketball history. I could literally sit here and fill up an hour of podcast time going through her resume. It's unprecedented. There's never been anything like it in college basketball. There's never been anything like it at LSU. Simply put, Kim Mulkey is the most decorated and most prestigious hire this athletic department has ever made. So, of course, on her first day, one of the first things she did was sit down for an interview with me. And, of course, like a dummy, I blew the first 5 minutes of that interview. Good job, Cody. Way to be on top of your game. So some of you know this, some of you don't, but I've had some different responsibilities and titles added to my plate. So part of my duties with Coach Mulkey were getting her welcomed and helping her get acclimated to the media climate here and getting her updated on different storylines and helping her get ready for her press conference and all that stuff. Well, one of the things that I did was my normal old job, which is interview people. And so as we sat down for the interview, I, in such a hurry, selected the wrong settings on my microphone. Excellent work again, Cody. So the first 5 minutes of this interview exist, but they don't sound great. So they're going to stay buried to history, maybe revealed at a later time. The last 22 minutes of this interview, however, were spectacular and not by my own doing. Coach Mulkey is a fountain of wisdom. She is a fighter. She is a champion. She brings out the best in her players, her staff, her coaches, but her community as well. And I told her this, and I've said it multiple times. There is no coach in the world, possibly, who understands just how much one program can transform and impact an entire community. It's easy to love a coach when they arrive. It's easy to welcome them with open arms and tell them how great they are. But you can really tell a lot about a coach and what they stand for and how people feel about them when they leave. And the outpouring of support and love and devotion to Kim Mulkey from Baylor in the days after she left for the LSU job told me all I needed to know about the impact that she made on that community while she was there. Now, I was aware of a lot of that growing up. As I've said before, in my household, we were fans of coaches, not necessarily teams. And Kim Mulkey was at the very top of that list. My mom owns 2 copies of her book. But getting to sit down with her one-on-one, face-to-face, was even more impactful than I could have imagined. So I'm a better person, a better employee, a better podcaster, a better interviewer for having done that interview and spent some time with her in the first few days. I hope that you're better at whatever you want to be better at for having listened to it. As a bonus to the end of this episode, I'm adding Coach Mulkey's conversation with Emily Dixon, basically because I blew the first 5 minutes of the interview. Fortunately, Emily had the interview shortly after and covered some similar territory. So I focused more on the past and her biography. Emily got into some of the present and what's going to happen with LSU basketball in its totality. I think it's a very good overall conversation that I'll now throw to. Without further ado, here is LSU women's head basketball coach, Kim Mulkey.
Can you tell me the story about the day that you became a coach for the first time? You just mentioned there that you plan to be a CEO, and if I have it correct, I think literally campus security came to your classroom and pulled you out.
I played in the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles for Pat Summitt and got back to home, Hammond, and fond memories there. Will Clark, we all know who Will is, mm-hmm. and played at Mississippi State. He and I did a little tour throughout the state. The World's Fair was going on because we're Olympians, you mm-hmm. know. And after that was done, I received a postgraduate scholarship from the NCAA. At that time, 5 males and 5 females were selected and said, basically, here's your blank check. Go choose the school of your choice to get your graduate degree. And it was just Louisiana Tech was all I really knew, and so I was working on my master's degree, and campus security came to the door, and I can even remember the teacher that was teaching the class, but I just was looking, and then they motioned for me to come to the door and speak to the campus security, and your first reaction is there's something bad that they're getting ready to tell me, mm-hmm. you know, with your family, but it was Dr. F.J. Taylor wanted us to grab you before class was over and tell you to come up to the 16th floor of Wiley Tower. He needs to visit with you. And I said, is everything okay? And they said, it's not an emergency. It's not anything bad. And so that's how it began. He told me that Sanja Hogue had resigned and was retiring from coaching at Louisiana Tech and that he wanted to give the job to Leon Barmore, but that he wanted me to be on Coach Barmore's staff. And my initial reaction was, you don't tell a coach who to put on their staff. Mm-hmm. I'm not comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. Now, Dr. Taylor, I know you love me and you think we'd make a great combination, but that's Coach Barmore's decision. And, of course, needless to say, Coach Barmore called me and the rest is history. Mm-hmm. They both talked me into doing it. Coach Barmore threw me out there at 23 years of age and go recruit. Well, I knew the state. I could drive and you know, find my way around, but mm-hmm. I didn't have anybody to teach me the ropes. So basically, I just learned on my own.
What were the early years of that education like, getting into coaching? Because if you didn't plan to be a coach, you're probably not obviously, you're developing that skill set as a player, but it's a transition. What were those early years like as you learned the difference between a coach and a player?
I'm on Barmore's staff immediately after having played for him for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So now you've got to figure out, how do I go from a player-coach role to a coach-coach role? That is not easy because he's my coach. He's mm-hmm. who I look up to. He's who I listen to. But yet I need to be able at some point to kind of buck him and say, mm-hmm. I disagree with that decision. We need to do this. That happens over time. You don't start it right out of the gate, and you let it evolve and you let it happen with time. And then my responsibilities on the floor were very comfortable because I was a guard for Coach Barmore and Sanja Hogue's teams at Louisiana Tech. So teaching the game was not the problem, and he knew I was going to teach the game the way he taught me. Mm-hmm. And then became associate head coach. I think the only thing I did not do during my tenure at Louisiana Tech as an assistant was scheduling. And thank God, that's just not me. That's a difficult job. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to do scheduling. But 15 years at my alma mater, and he prepared me for the job that we did at Baylor.
I think you could make an argument, and someone probably has, that you've sort of been there through the rise of women's college basketball. I'm quoting from the New York Times here. This was written in 2012, I think, right before y'all won a national championship. Mulkey represents the sporting possibilities available to women since the passage 40 years ago of the gender equity legislation known as Title IX, scholarships, championships, Olympic gold medals, financial security, and the self-assurance to be forceful and brash and daring without being apologetic. You're someone that was at the very forefront of the rise of this sport, a trailblazer. When you're blazing a trail, are you conscious of that? Are you thinking to yourself, you know, I'm doing something new? Or are you just in the moment and being you and authentically you?
Being me, there are people who fought Title IX battles, and that was their purpose. And I'm very conscious of those people and very grateful to mm-hmm. them. That's not who I am. Mm-hmm. I am just a very plain-spoken, say-it-like-it-is person. Sometimes it hurts people's feelings. Sometimes people are intimidated, but when they get to know me and they're around me, they're like, you're nothing like people think you are. Mm-hmm. I coach very bluntly. I get on referees very bluntly. It's not personal. It's fighting to be a winner. It's fighting to put a product on that floor. And I always think, just do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Just do the right thing. And sometimes in life, people don't do the right thing, either from peer pressure or they may be the lone dissent and the rest of them are going a different direction. I've never been one that was influenced by peers. I've never been one that was influenced by anything but my heart. Mm-hmm. And I will fight for the institution that I represent. I will never embarrass the institution that I represent. And people grow to understand and love me for that. And it's very important that you surround yourself with people you trust. I have a real hard time trusting. Mm-hmm. That's probably because I'm a divorced woman and, you know, been with one guy my whole life, spent 5 years dating him and was supposed to spend the rest of my life with him. So there are factors in your life that make you trust people or you don't trust people. And I don't trust very easily.
What does it take to earn your trust? I'm asking selfishly,
time,
kind of. Yeah.
Time.
Yeah.
I observe more than you think. Mm-hmm. I observe people, and I'm certainly, you won't see me, I'm not the gossiping type. I love fans, and I'll go out there and mingle with fans, and I'll get after it, you know, all the things I need to do. But at the end of the day, I'm very observant. When you don't think I'm watching you, I'm watching you. I'm not afraid to do things out of the box. You heard earlier when we met with the team, my staff is not full of former head coaches. My staff has managers that grew up in my program at Baylor, and I watched their work ethic. Mm-hmm. I treated them like players. My staff is made up of a business guy that spent 25 years of his life managing women, all women in the business world. Mm-hmm. And I thought, there's something special about him. Yeah. My staff is going to be loyal, but they're not going to be yes people. They are going to make me look good, and they're going to do the things that I don't want to do. And that's how it works.
I'm quoting again from another article that I was reading as I was preparing for this. This was from ESPN. I think it was from the same time period. It said, Mulkey went from one of the former superpowers of the sport, referring to Louisiana Tech, to create her own essentially from the ground up, a Hall of Fame coaching resume, if there ever was one. And that struck me as poignant because you're doing that again. You're leaving the superpower of the sport and coming to a place that has a foundation, certainly. And we've seen, I mean, you've seen the packed PMAX and the Final Four appearances, and you've been on the opposite sideline in some of those. But to do that again, do you relish that challenge of wanting to build something?
Well, first of all, I'm 59 next week or 2 weeks from now. So if I don't have the energy to do it, then I'm cheating LSU.
I'm not worried about the energy.
I'm a young 59, and I've got a lot of energy, but I'm also wiser. We grow wiser with age, and I've surrounded myself with youth on my staff. I've surrounded myself with people who believe like I believe and people who have been around me. I don't have a lot of turnover in my staff for a lot of reasons. I take care of them financially, and they see what we do inside that locker room. Guys, I wouldn't have left Baylor for just any school. I've had opportunities to leave Baylor, and no one ever knew about it. This just felt right. It felt right. I'm coming home. I truly am coming home.
It's easy to celebrate a new coach, right? It's hard to say goodbye to a coach as they leave, and I think you can tell a lot about someone based on the reaction when they leave a place. And I don't know if you paid much attention to it or not, but I was blown away by the response yesterday from Baylor fans. You went to that place, I think they'd won 7 games the year before, and you know, a couple years later, that entire university was in a very dark place. And it's been written time and time again, but you told your team they could be the shining light. How have you seen the ability, because I think you got into this as a competitor, right? And you just loved the game and you wanted to compete. And that's the introduction to the game. But at some point, at what point did you realize this sport, what we do, can be bigger than the wins and the losses? It can transform an entire community, entire place. Was that the moment you realized it during those darker days, or did you know it before then?
I think you just feel it along the way. You know, before we won that first national championship at Baylor in 2005, we lost to Pat Summitt in Tennessee in a Sweet 16 game, and we lost with 0.2 of a second on the clock. Not 1 second, 0.2 of a second. And we put on our shirts all summer, 0.02, to remind us how close we were to doing something for the first time in women's basketball and be able to do it so quickly. And what did we have to sell at Baylor? What did we have to sell when I went there? All we could sell was myself, my playing days, and my assistant coaching days at Louisiana Tech. And so many young people took a chance on me and believed in me. And we just beat the bushes and found those players that some overlooked. And we won that first championship in 05, 5 years after we got there. But the thing I will always say, and I will continue to say it here at LSU, we were hungry. I think LSU is hungry for a lot of good things right now, just across campus. I think the state of Louisiana is hungry. You know, I read very little on my phone, but there are 3 newspapers that I read every day, and that has been that way since I became a coach. One is the local paper in Waco, and one is the Advocate. Well, why do I do that? Because this has always been my home state. I've always had an interest in the state, not just LSU, not just Louisiana Tech, the state. And you want people to be hungry. You don't want to spoil them. Sometimes when you win so much, they take you for granted and they become spoiled. You have seen what women's basketball can do at LSU. You have seen other sports, gymnastics, football, national championship recently, baseball, World Series, your softball team and how good they are. Well, we need to all have aspirations to be good. And it just hit me that this is where I need to come and I need to try to get there. It's not going to happen overnight. I think I want to reiterate that again. This is not happening overnight because I stepped foot on this campus. This is going to take a major commitment, a major love for LSU to get the ball rolling, because it's not just about the talent on the floor. There's a lot of things that have to be done before you get all that talent on the floor that can win championships.
No LSU head coach or player has ever played in a national championship game in basketball, much less won as many as you have. And I was thinking about both your start at Baylor, and it's a 7-win program, and then you get them to the heights, and you talk about the 0.2 of a second, right? Which is more difficult, that first step or that last step? That first step and getting it off the ground, or that last step to actually get up to the top and cut down the nets?
I've always said maintaining excellence is harder. Hmm. It's hard as heck to get there, but buddy, it is much harder to maintain it. You see many college programs, I don't care what sport it is, they fluctuate up and down, up and down, up and down. I'm about this right here. Every now and then you might have a bad season, but I'm about consistency. I want to put a product on that floor that's consistent. And when you walk off that floor and you've been beaten, you gave it everything you had, and you were very prepared. Just might lose to a more talented team. Coaches know if that team was prepared. They know if they gave it their all, and you have to live with that until you get the talent level better.
What was your reaction when Kramer told you he was going to LSU?
I probably acted more like a coach than a mother. He needed me to be a mother, and I wasn't. I made him tell me why. I made him understand, you got Alex Bregman in front of you, probably the greatest player to ever play at LSU, and are you ready to sit? You've never sat. You've always been big man on campus. You've always been the star. You better think about this. And then subconsciously, I was probably saying that because if he would have just stayed at Baylor or stayed in the Big 12, I could have seen him just a hop, skip, and a jump drive. I knew that I wasn't going to talk him out of it. And the selling point to me was, Mom, you and McKenzie have cut down nets. I want to play at a place where they can play for a national championship. And with that, I shut my mouth. He won.
The inverse question, what was Kramer's reaction when you told him you were going to LSU?
Kramer has probably FaceTimed me and texted me more in the last 5 days than he has in years. Mom, what do I say? Mom, what do I say? They're doing it. Mom, what do I say? Mom, what do I say? I said, don't lie. Avoid it, or you're going to have to give them an answer that just stay tuned. And he, I hope he handled it well, but his reaction was when I was offered the job, I probably can't repeat it on microphone, but it's one of those adjectives that was real excited.
Okay, yeah, don't make me go back and edit this. That's just more work for me.
He was excited.
Did you get a taste of what LSU was like? I know you grew up here, and I think you knew the fight song as a kid, and everyone was fans. But coming back and watching him play and being on campus, being around LSU fans, did you get a feel for the magic of this place?
I've always known it.
Yeah.
I've always known it. Ironically, I can remember being in the football stadium one time. I told you on my recruiting visit, we didn't tour the campus, but I went to the football game, and I can tell you who was playing, and I can tell you the Heisman Trophy winner on the other team. USC, 1980. Can any of y'all tell me who the Heisman Trophy winner running back was?
I bet Michael can.
I think I'm pretty
– Marcus.
You ever heard of Charles White?
Yep, Charles White.
Wasn't that who it was?
Yep.
So I watched that game. I saw – and then when Kramer was being recruited and the games he played in at Alex Fox, you know, it's, yes, I'm aware of it. You can't not be aware of it.
I'll pass you off to Emily now, but I haven't asked you about this team, this program, how you get started. What are the core values, the day ones that you install and instill when you walked in that locker room and talked to the team? How do you start building this thing? What are the three or four keys that you've got to start with?
Well, I've got to have a chance to evaluate the talent and what they're capable of doing. I certainly can't come in here and expect some of the things out of this current team that I may have expected out of my last Final Four national championship team at Baylor. What are they capable of doing? What are realistic goals for the team? And the only way you gather that is you got to have them on the floor. This process doesn't start today or tomorrow or whatever. We've got to, you know, get moved. We've got to, you know, do the Hall of Fame stuff. We've got to get comfortable here and take our time and just do what we did. Do what we know to do. And that is get in offices, you know, watch some film from the previous season, meet these kids, make these kids want to run through a wall for you. And it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. I have to complete my staff and make sure I have it in place. And I got to go buy a lot more purple and gold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We can help you with that. We can point you in the right direction. I'll end on this because you mentioned it. Hall of Fame. How do you get Michael Jordan to induct you in a Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, he and I are bosom buddies. No, I'm
best
teasing.
Buddies, right?
I'm teasing. How that transpired, you know, Michael and I were in the 84 Olympics mm-hmm. together. I had asked Coach Leon Barmore, you have to have a presenter be someone that is in the okay. Naismith Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And so I had asked Coach Barmore, but he's having some serious health issues right now, and he couldn't do it. I'm not sure if he was healthy, he would do it anyway because he hates to fly. That's probably why he's not coaching mm-hmm. anymore. And so I was talking to Fran at the Naismith Hall of Fame, who organizes all of it, and I said, you know, I can list all these great ones. I want to introduce me, Larry Bird, da-da-da-da. I said, but how selfish of me would it be to ask them to spend their time and money to fly out there to do that? Mm. Who is presenting other people that you know are coming to the Hall of Fame? Mm. And she told me that, well, you were in the 84 Olympics with Michael. He's doing Kobe Bryant's tribute. I said, throw him in there. Let him do mine. It's all good. And that's how it came about. And, of course, she had to ask him. And I said, you know, I'm honored. And so that's going to be a fun night. And Kramer, since you guys, you know, I'm Kramer's mom, so I'll throw this sure. in there. He was very, you know, noncommittal on going to it because he's AAA, and you just don't ask the big leaguers and the major leagues and the GMs, can I have a couple of days off to go to my mom's Hall of Fame celebration? Mm-hmm. No matter how big it is, you're scared to death. You're trying to make it sure. to the big leagues. But when he saw or heard that Michael Jordan was presenting me, he got real brave, okay? All of a sudden, he went to the major league players and said, help me with this. Should I dare ask? And they said, yeah, you better ask. So he's going to be able to be there as well. They gave him a couple of days off. So it'll be a great celebration. I hope LSU people will get on board and buy a suite and buy tickets because there will be many Baylor people there that love what we did there and that I love and are lifelong friends. But we now got to get some purple and gold at that Hall of Fame.
I'd like to selflessly offer my services.
Hey,
if you need any help navigating the media there, I'd be happy
to. Yeah, you could handle Kramer's wardrobe.
Sure.
You know, he loves the shoes and the clothes.
Whatever you need.
Yeah.
Strictly for LSU and
okay,
for you, Cody, I'd be
happy to
do it.
You got it. You got it. You're going to be his escort.
There we go. All right, we'll wrap it up now. Dee Dee's here. So, Dee Dee, do you want the microphone?
Bro,
do you want to come
so
ask
bomb.
Some questions?
The bomb! The bomb! How are you, baby? Oh yeah, you good?
Dee Dee, you can start. You can finish the interview if you want to.
Huh?
You can start firing questions at her.
Firing questions at her?
Yeah, go
Dee
for it.
Dee Dee has
to.
Been my rock for about 5 days.
There you go.
Honestly.
There you go. Yep. Well, if you need help finding purple.
Well, yeah,
I promise
gonna,
you, she knows where to find
it. Tiger print. Whatever.
She's gonna meet more friends of mine that she didn't know, because I like to dress nice. Professional, but I don't like to shop.
Mm-hmm.
My time is more valuable than a damn credit card pulling out. But my friends here, they're already like, hey, I already got you something. I'll go, send me your credit card. Send me your check. So I'm going to tell them to find Dee Dee and tell her she can tell them where to go.
Perfect. Tell them where to go.
That's
there you
right,
go.
Baby. You
Coach,
got
thank
it.
You so much for your time. I appreciate
Cody,
it.
Cody, you're welcome, baby. You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Thank you.
Mulkey, welcome back to Louisiana and to your new home here at LSU. And you've accomplished so much in your career, but how surreal is it growing up as the Pistol Pete of girls basketball in Tangipahoa Parish, and now you take the reins here of this women's basketball program in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center?
Well, you know, a lot of people probably don't realize his movie was filmed in Ponchatoula, which mm-hmm. is the parish I grew up in, and even some parts of it was filmed in Hammond, where I'm from. I can't explain to you how I feel right now. First of all, I'm tired, but it's an excitement. It's a humility in my soul right now that this is where I grew up. And it's like you're going full circle in life. Certainly, I didn't graduate from LSU, but there's so many connections to Louisiana. This is my home state. I've said it many, many times. It didn't matter where my career took me, I would always be a Louisiana girl. And I'm just honored to have been asked to come back here. I'm grateful, I'm thankful to Scott, to Stephanie, to Dee Dee. They worked me, but they didn't annoy me, you know, and that speaks volumes. They understood the emotions involved when 21 years of your life is spent mm-hmm. building a program, and it just takes time for someone to work through that. And it's meant to be. I'm a firm believer that timing in one's life allows you to make a lot of decisions. And my staff that will be here with me, they don't know much about LSU to do, but they're from North Louisiana. But they're going to love it. I'm going to love it. We've got a lot of work to do, and I'm going to tell people, be patient. I'm going to tell myself to be
patient.
I was
about to say.
Yes, because I like things done yesterday. But it's exciting.
Speaking of growing up as a four-time state champion at Hammond High, you said going to LSU would have been the easy option, state school right down the road, but instead you decide to go to Louisiana Tech and you make history. Now, after 21 years at Baylor, what made LSU the right decision now?
Just timing in your life, certainly a commitment, to the program financially and things like that. You listen, but my mom is 40 minutes away. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how many relatives I have in the state of Louisiana, and it was just a thing where, you know, it's time to go home. And that's about the best description that I can give you. There was no magical moment. It was 5 days of back and forth on, you know, because I'm a very loyal person.
Right.
I don't live out of a suitcase. I've lived in two states my entire life. My children were born in Louisiana. My grandchildren were born in Texas. So just working through things and understanding, you're getting a message. The good guy upstairs is sending you a message, go back home.
When you look in the rafters, you see the Final Four banners. Sue Gunner's statue is here in the PMAC, and stars like Simone Augustus, Sylvia Fowles, Tamika Johnson, Joyce Walker all played here. So as somebody who has been around women's basketball your entire life, what's your view of the history of this program now that you take over as head coach?
Well, my view of it is I had an up-close and personal viewpoint along the way. I played against Joyce Walker. In fact, in my game room back in Waco, there's a picture of Joyce and I going at it. Certainly, you know the history of Simone Augustus, Tamika mm-hmm. Johnson, Sylvia Fowles, and us playing against those guys yep. in the Final Four and in other games. So I got a dose of it, and what a remarkable job Sue Gunner did here. She's a Hall of Famer. She's a legend mm-hmm. here. And if I can do just a little bit of what she did here, I feel like I will have fulfilled my job. You don't understand, unless you're in the business, some of the greatest women's basketball players in college played here at LSU. And we don't ever need to forget that.
Family is extremely important to you. Your daughter Mackenzie played for you, is now on staff with you. You spend many nights over at Alex Box watching your son Kramer play baseball, and you are surrounded by a lot of your staff here today. What was that plane ride like as you're all together embarking on this brand new chapter, but again, kind of as your own team?
Well, two of my staff members that will be ops people are from North Louisiana, mm-hmm. so they were just ecstatic, you know. But the others are happy, excited, a little nervous because you know, they don't know what to expect. They don't know what they're going to see internally today. But what you get with those guys are just quality people. Mm-hmm. They're just good people. And obviously I don't have all of them with me, but back to Mackenzie being on staff, you know, she's going to have my second grandchild in a couple of months, and I'm not sure I'm going to convince her to come right now, and that's okay too. But I think it's good that she and her husband Clay and Cannon are here today so that they can, you know, make a good family decision if they decide to come and join us. Mackenzie doesn't know as much about LSU, obviously. She's a Baylor graduate. Kramer, you don't have to convince him of anything. He's, you know, he's loving it because I'm Kramer's mom here, and he loves that. You know, his little ego, you know, feeds off of that. But we can humble him and put him in his place. But just exciting, you know. It was just exciting to wake up this morning, and the hard part was done yesterday. Mm-hmm. The hard part was telling your former players. Right. And if you have any heart, and you recruit and you invest in young people, you never want to disappoint them. And I just had to get through that.
Well, it seems like Cannon so far is already having a good time. So maybe you'll have him on your side when it comes to that convincing.
He's a handful, but we all love our children and our grandchildren, don't we? And he keeps saying, going to the hotel? No, Cannon, we're not going to a hotel.
We're going here.
Yes, so. He's a happy kid. That's what you want, is you want your children to be happy.
Education and graduation seem to be the foundation of your programs. And LSU fans know about the national championships and the accolades, but how would you describe the overall culture that you want to create here in Baton Rouge?
Well, I'll quickly tell the team and anybody that is around me. I grew up in the country, in Tangipahoa Parish. Tickfall, Louisiana was my rural address. I went to the Hammond Public Schools. I can name every school during integration that I attended. My parents graduated high school and went to work. They didn't go to college. All they knew was middle income, let's go to work, let's pay our bills, let's provide for our family. Basketball allowed me to keep them from having to pay for my education. And that made me proud. And so I am a stickler more and a disciplinarian more when it comes to academics than I am probably anything. Certainly not breaking the law or getting arrested. And I think it's the way I was brought up. Mm-hmm. I owe those young ladies and their families one thing when they come here. I owe them a degree. I can't promise that they're going to play in the WNBA. I can't promise SEC championships. I can't promise national championships. That's what we're striving to do, but I can make a promise in their home. I will not use your child's talents and send her home without a degree.
You'll get a feel for your roster and staff outlook in the next couple of months and as you come back and you get settled. But what's your message to fans as everybody gets ready to pack the PMAC in this new era of women's basketball?
Well, you want to establish what was here before. Mm-hmm. And many of your LSU fans and alums remember that.
Yes.
And so you need to keep reminding them of that. They have a vision of what it was. They see it with gymnastics here. They see it when baseball, you know, the World Series. They saw it with the national championship in football. They see it in softball. And you just need to get it back. And winning, look, we're no dodos in coaching. Winning solves a lot of problems. But that doesn't happen overnight. So what we have to do as a staff is we have to be visible. We have to meet people. We have to tell them, you better get your ticket now, because if we get there, you're not going to be able to get the seat you want eventually. And that's how I sold it at Baylor. And to tell them, don't have unrealistic expectations too early. And help us get to where it used to be. And you don't have to wait until we start winning games. You got to help us win. That's my message, is that be realistic, give us time. As impatient as I am, I've got to give us time. And I will evaluate the talent here. I will, you know, get the staff in place and we all get settled in. And when we do, there won't be anybody on this campus that'll outwork us. We might not be able to get where some of these great programs are quickly enough, but they won't outwork us.
Well, you know, we like parades around here in Louisiana, and you've had many championship ones in Hammond, up in Ruston. You've had quite a few over in Waco, so I think people are ready for another championship parade. But like you said, only successful goals come from realistic expectations. So,
well, I'm a realist now, and I tell it like it is. You know, that must be a Louisiana thing. You listen to Dee Dee talk.
Especially as we have Dee Dee right over here,
too. We just tell it like it is. We don't have an agenda. It might offend you. It might not offend you, but our heart is in
the
right place.
Yeah.
And it's just good to be back home. I probably, you know, people don't know this side of me, but I can be very quick-witted and never change my facial expressions. So I will be able to tell more Boudreaux and Thibodeau jokes than I have in the last 21 years, and people will understand what the heck I'm talking about. So I'm looking forward to meeting everybody that loves LSU, bring more fans in that never follow LSU. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people in my parish, in Tangipahoa Parish, that are not LSU people, but I bet you they'll buy those season tickets.
They will be now.
You got it.
Well, thank you very much again. Welcome home, and excited for this next season.
Thank you.